listening to National Rock Review.
Okay, Andrew, question for you. Who would you say are your guitar heroes?
Oh, gosh. Many. Paul Kossoff.
Yeah.
From Free would definitely be, you know, up there. I mean, they're kind of like the standard ones that, you know, everyone has. I mean, Hendrix is great, but, yeah. You know, I'm also big of Freddie King.
Yeah.
I love B.B. King. Maybe some people that, you know, that people didn't pay attention to. In fact, there's a guy that used to play with the Pretenders that I thought was fantastic.
James Honeyman Scott?
James Honeyman Scott was fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, there are just so many great, you know, pop staples. I mean, we were talking about pop staples the other day, and he's got, like, you know, people don't really consider his guitar style because it's not like, you know, like wild guitar solos, but, I mean, just super cool the way that it supports the vocal. I mean, just, I think he's a great guitar player.
You've always said Ritchie Blackmore too.
Ritchie Blackmore is really good. I mean, and the thing about Ritchie Blackmore that, you know, the people, you know, sometimes miss, you know, Ritchie Blackmore played as a studio musician for years, played on a lot of stuff, all that Joe Meek stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so he can play, like, you know,
anything.
Huge variety of things. And I think that's kind of one of the things that, you know, that make Ritchie Blackmore and Jimmy Page, those guys were so good because they literally had spent so much time playing all types of music.
Right.
And it's amazing, like, especially with Jimmy Page, you just kind of go back and dig around and just, you know, look at the different types of sessions that he had played on. You know, Michael Bloomfield is another guy that I just think is fantastic. So I know I'm jumping all over the place.
No,
but we really do listen to a ton of stuff. And it's really, you know, less about, you know, kind of necessarily, you know, the format, just whether if they're doing something that kind of speaks to you.
Yeah, because if we literally do listen to, like, anything and everything, because you never know where. I mean, like, I bought Andrew this thing. I don't remember if it was birthday or if I just showed up with it. I don't know. But there's this great psychedelic band out of Austin called the Black Angels.
Yeah.
And I saw them on Austin City Limits, and I thought they were phenomenal. And I was like, Andrew's going to love that because he loves, like, space rock stuff too.
Yeah.
But we don't have the video thing.
Oh, I thought we had the video.
No,
okay.
We don't have.
Okay, so yeah,
we didn't do that. But anyway, what I was going to say was the Black Angels. For me, the point of how do those things go together with, like, if you're listening to, like, Humble Pie or you're listening to Aretha? Well, all those things have in common is they swing on some level.
Yeah.
So there is a certain level of soul. There are different forms of it, you see. So that's the common point for me. I mean, to me, I mean, I used to listen to, like, a lot of goth stuff and that kind of thing. You probably think this is nuts, but I always thought that the Sisters of Mercy were very much of a swing kind of thing. I know you probably wouldn't think that. You wouldn't think that, but to me, I always thought they were super, like, super, super, I don't know, almost like, you know, Julian Cope's kind of thing. There's a level of integrity, okay? There's a level of integrity that they were doing that, I mean, that I just think is, I mean, the Gun Club. What about the Gun Club? All right, well, we agree on the Gun Club then. Have you ever heard of the Gun Club with Jeffrey Lee Pierce?
No, I've not.
Oh, man.
You have got to find some Gun Club, like that live record.
Yeah, exactly. And really, I mean, I don't know if you ever listened to Nick Cave, but Kid Congo Powers.
Yeah.
I mean, there were, you know, definitely some common ground between those two bands.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, and absolutely. But, I mean, really, the Gun Club, if I'm trying to tie all of it together in a very weird way, I mean, they were definitely working from a blues-based thing, but it was almost kind of gothy, too.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a real doomy, kind of spooky, but he was working from that same thing that Skip James and Robert Johnson were doing. Don't you agree with that?
Yep.
That's not too crazy.
You can actually, in some house, you can hear something.
Yeah, you can hear all those things. It's phenomenal. But it was this L.A. kind of spooky, weird kind of stuff. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're actually the one that turned me on to the Gun Club.
Oh, they're You're a major one.
Yeah.
We're big fans of that.
Yeah, super huge. So, I mean, see, we're kind of all over the map, but when you listen to the stuff, you're not necessarily going to pick that up.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, Peter Gabriel, he thought that he was trying to sound like Otis Redding. There is nothing about him that says Otis Redding. Right?
Yeah.
There's true. Nothing about him. But what?
Yeah, I know.
What's the song he had, though? Was it big, I can't think of the hit he had. Like later on in the solo stuff, you can kind of hear some of it. You can
Sledgehammer.
Yeah, Sledgehammer. Yeah, you can hear a little bit of Otis and that, but you can't really hear it like earlier in the Genesis stuff.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that we're always listening to things that seemingly do not go together because, well, I mean, who else is the other person that we just absolutely adore? Oh, help me, Anthony and the Johnsons.
Oh, yeah, Anthony and Johnson.
Yeah.
Do you like him?
Yeah.
I thought you were
going to
say Nick
Drake. Well, no, I was talking about somebody that's happening right now that's very, I think, very soulful. I mean, I kind of think he's a modern Nina Simone.
Especially when he covers Lou Reed. I don't know if you get a chance, you should go and Google that guy covering any of the Velvet Underground stuff because his reading of Lou Reed's songbook is just
priceless.
Amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And incredibly soulful. And there's a level of integrity there.
Yeah.
But see, I mean, those are the things that we get thrown into the soup and it seems like it just doesn't work and it doesn't, how in the hell are you going to put that into what you're doing? But it's all about just kind of reaching for whatever kind of soul you can find and then kind of putting that in there. It doesn't really change the sound, but it widens the palette.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I think in this day and age as well, because music's so accessible, especially with the likes of streaming and Spotify and stuff like that. I mean, I just jump from place to place as well. You know, people ask me what I like, and it's kind of like, I'll say anything from like Miles Davis to Metallica and pretty much everything in between. And it's kind of like, you know, one minute I'll be listening to, like I said, kind of Blue, and then the next minute I'll listen to Slayer or something. And it's kind of like, you can just jump around and it doesn't really, you know, I don't like to be pigeonholed into any particular genre of music. It's kind of wherever my mood takes me, you know? So I totally understand where you come from there.
Yeah, I mean, we've always been that way. That's why we get along, because we understand each other. It's like a twin language. It's very difficult for other people to kind of speak the same language. We've kind of found that over the years, is that because he and I are so tightly woven without even realizing it.
Yeah.
It's the way that we write. It's the way that we communicate. It's like a family kind of relationship that other people cannot necessarily penetrate.
Yeah.
But we understand what we're talking about. Well, it does take time. You're being more diplomatic than I am. Because there is so much common ground, and it extends to film and art and everything else, anything having to do with humanities, you know, we pretty much agree on. But that's the way that we work, is that we have all of that language going on. And so when I give him a reference of, I would like for this to sound kind of like this, he's like, oh, yeah, okay. And then, you know, you flip the switch and you go on. That's the way that we write.
Right.
And it comes out sounding however it sounds, because we're steeped in that language. There's really not much to say regarding that, right?
No, I mean, you know, and sometimes, you know, it'll be, we'll try to get somewhere with it and it just doesn't happen and we'll put it on the shelf and then come back to it like a couple of, you know, months later, years later, and for whatever reason, it'll click then. So it's not necessarily, you know, like an automatic thing. You know, sometimes it's just, you know, just.
But that's songwriting.
Yeah, just trying to come at it from a different perspective sometimes.
Yeah, that's a very common complaint that songwriters have, is that, you know, sometimes you'll be working on something and then it just dries up and you just come back to it later on.
Yeah.
But we're very lucky because we understand each other so well. And because we work together so well, and we're such great friends, I have found that is a very rare type of relationship.
Yeah.
you know, it's just two kind of odd birds getting together in a room, and, you know, speaking twin language, and we come up with this pretty great stuff on a fairly consistent basis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, we enjoy it.
Well, I mean, it seems like other people enjoy it too. Otherwise, we wouldn't be going across the pond.
Well, yeah, but we're.
So you right. You just mentioned about the UK there. Obviously, apart from, like, you know, you've built up this little bit of a following through social media and stuff. Is there any other reason why it was so important for you to come to the UK first? Like you said, you've got people in Brazil and the rest of Europe and stuff. Was there any, you know, one reason in particular why you wanted to come here?
Oh, man, the history is just, yeah. I mean, you know, it's fun. We're in Atlanta, and you know, that's not lost on us. I mean, you know, Blind Willie McTell, you know, the Allman Brothers, yeah. Just down the road, A Mother's Fine is from here. So, I mean, we're really aware of the history of just the music that Atlanta presents.
Yeah.
But even more so than that, I mean, there's so many records, you know, Live at Leeds. There's so many musical events that have happened that took place in the UK that have shaped what we're trying to do. I mean, that are super important to us. I mean, we're really. I just want to walk by the marquee. I just want to. You know, there are places that I actually just kind of want to be able to walk by and point to and say, hey, you know, something that I love took place there.
Yeah.
Or that's, you know. That's where, you know, these guys got together. This band is from there. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's always been super important to both of us, and because both of us are very British-based and things that we like musically, you know, it's kind of a natural path.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, everybody that I like, all my favorite vocalists, Terry Reid, Steve Marriott, you know, Paul Rodgers, Rod Stewart, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all of them are British.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, all of them are men. So, but.
Oh, wait, there's Frankie Miller.
Well, yeah, he's Scottish. I know, so yeah, okay. There, yeah, there we, I need to counter that.
Okay, Tom Jones is from Wales.
So it's like, you see how this works? It's like, I'm setting it up for the kill. And he's like, no.
Yeah.
Here, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
And then if we, on another day, we'd be talking about Otis and Al Green, and
I mean, all that stuff. So, see, all that is in the soup, but we are very, I mean, obviously the Stones. That's kind of like on the shelf. But I mean, that's all part of that language. It's all part of the history. It's so much a part of us that I don't see how we could not do that. You know, and there's just a very strong basis for classic rock in the UK right now. For a while.
So you've got shows in where you got Newcastle, you've got Sheffield, you've got London,
Brighton.
Mm-hmm. You got any other ones? Are they the?
Not yet. I think that's it.
Right.
We're just doing. Remember, this is first time over, so we're doing what we're calling a mini tour.
Yeah.
But we just thought that if we could get the ball rolling and do 4 or 5 shows, and make sure that those shows do extremely well, then we can kind of get the ball rolling for like festival circuit, maybe, or bigger clubs, strong support for maybe bigger bands over there or something like that.
Yeah.
But we just kind of feel like that is where we need to be at this point.
Yeah.
That's what Rival Sons and Vintage Trouble did.
Yeah, totally.
You know that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, we're just following their lead.
Yeah. Great. So where do you find your inspiration for your songwriting?
Well, that's two different questions, really. Where do you find your...
Well, I mean, usually they'll just be... like riffs, like I'll get an idea for a riff where I'll be in the basement and something will come up, and we do a lot of sending music back and forth by phone.
Right.
So I'll record something and I'll send it to Suze like in the middle of the night, and then she'll send something back to me, and we'll kind of talk about what this sounds like. Or we might talk about for the bridge, we want like something that feels like the Mighty Clouds of Joy. Or there's usually some sort of like oddball reference that either she or I will say, and then once we say that, or she'll say, that thing that Bowie does on, this song, and then I'll say, okay, yeah, so that's what we're going for. So then we'll just automatically start, snowballing that way. So it's usually just some sort of spark. And then once we start going back and forth, that's really when it becomes a song.
He's incredibly prolific. He doesn't struggle with process at all. Never has. I've never seen anything like it in my life. It's like the radar is just always on. My radar, in terms of being a lyricist and doing melody, it flickers. And I really struggle with it, and it's really hard for me, probably because most of the stuff is so personal. And I don't know if people pick up on that or not. But some of that stuff is really, really, really difficult to kind of put out there. I mean, I remember even having some conversations with the last record of Andrew even asking me, he's like, are you sure you want to put that out? It's so personal. Well, yeah, you need to put it out.
You shouldn't
censor yourself, yeah. Right? I mean, it's not, it's kind of up to me personally, I guess, to deal with the consequences of that, but the new stuff, strangely enough, most of it is about death.
Well,
it is. Most of it is. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of death songs on there. I don't know if people are going to pick up on it because they'll think it's rocking. But
you can dance.
Yeah. So see, there's that whole goth element coming into it again. We should do like face paint when we do the shows. Yeah, I mean, we'll cover a lot of bases. We could do like the Whitby Goth Weekend too. Do that too. That'd be pretty great. But anyway, what I was gonna say was, there's a lot of death stuff preoccupation, and I'm not really sure where that comes from. Maybe it's kind of where I'm at these days with things. But
that'll get people out to the shows.
Yeah, it'll win us lots of fans. But. Yeah, I mean, on the other hand, we kind of sweeten the pot by making it like let's make it sound like a cross between Led Zeppelin and the Staple Singers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, kind of putting cheese on your broccoli or something. I don't know. I mean, that's just kind of how things do. I honestly don't think that a lot of people that are rock fans, maybe they do listen to the lyrics, and I should give them more, credit for that. I think a lot of people listen to it and they think, wow, this is really good rock music. And that's great within itself. But it would also be nice to go and, somebody would say, man, that's a killer. That's just completely killer riff. Or I haven't really thought about it that way. That's kind of odd that you said it that way or you felt that way.
Well, and the cool thing about music really is you can write something and it can mean something to you as you're writing it. And then
become something else.
Become something else to someone else when they hear it. I mean, it was this past week they had the thing on CNN where they were showing this guy in Brazil and he's getting brain surgery and he's playing Beatles songs while they're actually operating on his brain.
Cool.
And he's singing Yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm sure for him and everybody else in that. I mean, you got to Google it. It is insane.
I could watch it.
The guy's name is Diaz, and he had open, they had brain surgery, they were removing a tumor, and he was singing, Beatles songs while they were doing it, just to maybe make himself calmer or whatever the case might be. But when you watch that, it means a whole different thing than when, Paul McCartney wrote it.
Yeah.
He's talking about breaking up with his girlfriend. So,
here, famous case in point, Manson. Right?
Yeah.
Manson completely reinterpreted a lot of the Beatles songs in his own little twisted way, and it had nothing to do with what he was talking about, what the Beatles were trying to say.
What's that song by the Laws, There She Goes?
Yeah, what about it?
That song's about heroin.
Is it really? Oh my God, I never knew that.
That song's about heroin, and this guy's talking about, you know, what heroin felt like when he was taking it, and it becomes this huge kind of teeny bopper hit.
How fantastic! Yes. So, we should cover that.
It's interesting. I mean, if you ever, it's interesting.
That's the cool thing for music.
If you ever pick up like any song, read the lyrics, and then Google like that song title with meaning next to it, and read people's interpretations, there's always a thousand different interpretations of every song.
I mean, somebody asked me one time, was Bulletproof about being accused as a woman? Oh, shut up. And it's true. I mean, I have never.
I'm not laughing about being
It's a situation. Yet. It's a situation you were laughing about it because it's so far off the mark. She was trying to adapt it to her situation, to her cause.
Right.
And she was trying to raise awareness for women not being abused. And it isn't funny, but the reason that it is funny is because it was so far off the mark. It was actually a song of empowerment, of like, you know, you're not going to take something from me, or you're not going to do this, that, and the other. It had nothing to do with physical or mental abuse. But her take on it was that it was something deeper than that.
Right.
I mean, somebody asked me one time, there was Drowning that came out in 2012. Somebody asked me if that was about pill addiction. I have a drug problem. Anybody that knows me knows I do not have a drug problem. I'm one of the most boring people that you will ever meet. You know, I'm not swinging from chandeliers, neither is Andrew. But it was so interesting. It's like, well, how did you put that one together? So, you know.
But I mean, if it gives them something and they can take it and get something out of it.
Sure, that's what it means.
That's even better. It's, you know, it's whatever people want to make it to be.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah,
okay.
So, you know, you do what you can.
Great. Okay, so you guys have had quite a lot of high-profile support slots in the U.S. recently.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about some of those.
Oh, let's see. The last one was Devin Allman.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And,
that was great.
He was actually
super nice.
Yeah. He's got a fantastic band. I don't know if you guys had a chance to see them over in the UK, but his band is just
smoking. Insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Pat's on Tuesday. Pat Travers
were playing with us on Tuesday, and that's actually a new club for us too. So that's right. We're super excited about that.
Yeah. But I would say that I think the one that's probably meant the most to us,
Leon Russell,
is Leon Russell.
Right.
We played with Leon back in the day, and I mean, we've played with a lot of people. We've played with Joe Bonamassa and Chris Duarte, and who else? I mean,
Blackberry Smoke.
We played with them back in the day.
Mark Ford.
We opened for Mark Ford. I mean, we've done a lot of shows that are, I mean, if you look at the resume, it's actually pretty good. But I personally, not speaking for Andrew, because he may have a different take on it, but for me, Leon was the pinnacle, because he's one of the people that helped create that sound that we're going for.
Right.
And, you know, he's coming back, what, next month?
Yeah,
July. Right. So hoping to go and see him, because you know he's getting up there and he's in delicate health.
Yeah.
But he was responsible for a lot of that sound. And Bobby Whitlock is coming too. You know, who was in Derek and the Dominoes. Yeah.
Booker T's coming.
So, there are a lot of people, but you know, we're just grateful for those opportunities, because they're few and far between. And they must see something in us that they think's all right.
Yeah, so we've been really lucky that way.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
I think.
Great. Okay, well, I've got one last question for you, and then I'll let you go, because I said this would only take 20 minutes and would be nearly an hour. So. Yeah, so the last question I got, obviously, your last album, Stay on the Ride, that was that 2013? when that came 14. out? 14. 14, was it? All right, okay. So I was just wondering, with regards to new material, and have you got any plans to put out any new material or a new album anytime soon?
Well, we're talking about, we're always writing songs, so that's one thing that we always try to, keep going, is just always working on something new. And we've got about 15 or 16 songs that we kind of need to whittle down, and then we need to pick a studio and try to get started on it. So we hope to be able to, to get started at least sometime in July.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be ready by the time we go over. It's not, but the thing is we've been playing a lot of the new material live, and it's gone over really well.
Right.
So you guys will hear all of that. It's like a preview. then it'll be out whenever it's out. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's an entirely new direction. It's the friends that have heard it say that it's a continuation of kind of what we're doing, but would you say it's a little more gospel-y, or what do you think's different about it?
There's a couple things that kind of have some, I guess, gospel, and really, I don't say trapping, but just kind of, like, we've been listening to a lot of the Staple Singers. Love those guys. We've been listening to a lot of Aretha. So, but it's still loud. We haven't really turned the amps down at all. So it's kind of like, our version of that, I guess you might say. It'll just be interesting. Because we are going to probably play a lot of new material when we get to the UK. So it'll be interesting to see what people think of it. So it's we'll just kind of.
I think they'll love it. I think they'll love it.
We hope.
Well, okay, but I mean, we'll probably, maybe if we're on the ball, by the time we get there, maybe we could leak a track or two.
Yeah, we could do that. We might be able. I mean, the other thing that we do that's we record every rehearsal, and then we drive each other nuts,
kicking it apart.
So that's.
That's one of our hobbies.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, that's kind of the way that we get things done.
Yeah.
Again, it's a forking process that's probably not unique to us, but I'm sure everybody doesn't do it that way. But that's what works for us. We're very discerning. It's funny because one of our new band members was kind of watching his work, and I said, see, it's kind of like the Keystone Cops. It looks like we're running around never doing anything, and we're not making any sense, and we're speaking gibberish, but somehow we're getting songs written, and it's very odd working process, but it does seem to we get stuff done despite that, the nuttiness.
That's awesome. Sounds great. Well, that's all the questions I've got for you, so thanks for taking the time to speak to us. It was really great chatting with you guys, and can't wait for you to come over here very soon, really, only a couple of months away. So we look forward to seeing you in August.
Yeah, I mean, we can't wait. We are just waiting with bated breath.